What up, witches, and welcome to Witch and a Bitch in a Podcast. I'm your host, Darren.
And I'm Vicky. I hope you're all doing really, really well today.
I was going to say top of the morning to you, but I'm sorry for any Irish listeners. I apologize now for that really bad Irish accent. I feel like I should, like, whenever we do one of these episodes where it's full of a lot of Gaelic or Galga terms, that we should just, like, immerse ourselves in listening to a lot of Jim Mowen.
Yes.
Before we do the show, so that way, you get in the spirit of the Irish, and then you
kind
just
of get that. It comes out a little
just
bit.
Just comes
easier.
Out without thinking. Like, yes. So,
I have to think about it a lot when I try to pronounce.
Yeah.
Them.
So, for full transparency, everyone, the reason why we're releasing this on a Thursday and not a Wednesday is we already recorded this one yesterday, but then we decided to do over.
We did need to do a redo.
Yeah, there were a lot of, like, Irish terms that both of us didn't feel comfortable with. So we decided to take a back seat and just go on a bit of a Google search and a bit of a YouTube search. And on that note, quick shout out to Laura O'Neill. So we've stumbled across your YouTube channel. We wanted to give you a shout out. So I've already been listening to, like, I've only just started listening. First time listener? No, what is it? Long time listener, first time caller.
Yeah, that's him.
But, you know, so we want to give you a quick shout out because we actually stumbled across a YouTube channel when looking up how to pronounce these names. So I'm going to stick a little link in the comments on the Book of Face just so that y'all can go and find Laura. But Laura, if you are listening and you'd love to come on our show, we would love to have you. So we know that you obviously are a representative of the Irish Pagan School.
Yep.
And I'm actually going to check it out. I haven't done it yet, but it's one of the things to do now because I want to learn more.
Yeah, that's it. Why not? Learning,
like,
more is
I've already learned so much from you in, like, one day.
Yes. See,
imagine what I can learn over a long period of time.
I was going to say, over a structured length of time.
Exactly. So
why are we talking all things Irish?
Well, because it's fun. No, I'm just kidding.
It really is.
The reason why is we wanted to, first of all, wish everyone a blessed Lunasar. So I hope I pronounced that correctly, Lunasar. Otherwise known as Lammas, but we prefer to use the term Lunasar.
Yep.
So we wanted to obviously talk about the festival, even though it has already technically happened.
Yeah.
According to the calendar, it was on the 1st of Feb.
Yeah.
But the astrological timing of this one, so I'm talking about the Southern Hemisphere here. So it normally happens when the sun is at 15 degrees Aquarius in the Southern Hemisphere. So for the Northerners, I know for y'all, you just celebrated Imbolc.
Imbolc,
yes. So you might think, what? Why are they talking about Lunasar? It's because we're in the Southern Hemisphere. So flip it and reverse it. Yeah, that's that Missy Elliott. Yeah. My favorite thing. Everything is Missy Elliott related now.
Yeah,
whenever we have to flip things. So some pagans will actually hold the traditional astronomical timing, whereas others will use the calendar date of the 1st of Feb, and then others will then use, the Northern Hemisphere is the 5th of August, so if you were to flip it, that would have fallen on the 5th of February, but I don't think that's how it works, which is Old Lammas.
Yeah.
But realistically, because it's a changing of the seasons, really, it goes for a period. It's not a day.
You're not set. You're not, like, locked into that one day. If you miss it, you're done. You can't celebrate it. It doesn't really work that way. And I think, and, like, researching it a little bit more and looking through some of the background with it and some of the history and things, like, it was celebrated for that whole month. Like, it was a whole month kind of thing. So most of them, with them, you kind of got a bit of leeway, really.
You do.
You got a bit of leeway.
And also, like, the gods know. Life happens.
That's it. Life
happens. They know. Universe is not going to get angry at you like, oh, you didn't do it on this specific day when the sun crossed over the meridian and da-da-da. So, therefore, it doesn't count.
You're done. That's it. You know what? It's all about intention and all of those kind of things. And, you know, the other thing, they're seasonal. It's about season. It's about nature. And, you know, nature doesn't necessarily change instantly.
Nature doesn't listen to the calendar.
No, that's right.
Nature listens to nature.
That's right. It doesn't instantly go, okay, whoops, now we're into autumn. Or
I forgot to melt the frost.
Yeah, that's it. Whoopsie, do we just skip it now?
Oh, soz about it. I accidentally had a random hot day. Summer's over.
That's it. So So don't stress too much about the exact date.
Actually,
I mean, it's nice to do it around that thing. And if you really want to, then please do. Please do. But just don't be too hard on yourself.
Yeah. And that's like, if there's one thing you can learn from our podcast is that we give a no fucks given to any rules or regulations. Like, you do what feels right. If it doesn't feel right based on where you live, because it's still fucking hot.
Yeah.
It's still summer, very much so. Then that's okay. Celebrate it later in Feb when the weather starts to change more and you're getting into the autumn weather.
It's starting to change a bit.
Because even just within the continental mass that is Terra Australis, otherwise known as the Federation of Australia, like, we are that fucking huge that the seasons differ from city to city, state to state.
Yeah.
Like, corner to corner.
There's no sort of corners, set.
But you know what I mean.
Yeah, but like there's no set overarching seasons or anything like that within Australia anyway. So, and that's, I think, is a really big thing with, especially with the Sabbats and stuff like that now, is about trying to adapt them to your environment and to your actual life. Oh no, why are you laughing at me? What have I done now?
No, nothing.
My la-la stuff.
No. It's because, like, every time we say something that it's like, yeah. All I hear is crows in the background on your end going, and it sounds like they're agreeing with you.
They do. They're my little mates.
That could be the sign of the Morrigan.
Could be.
She's listening. She's agreeing with us, see?
Yeah, see? The crows have spoken. She knows what's up. Hey, I wouldn't mess with her. So if she says yes, it's a yes.
Okay. That was the longest introduction.
I know, that was the biggest.
So, Vicky.
Okay.
Let's talk Lunasa. So, obviously, it's the festival that celebrates Lu. And I know that you've done a bit of research into a story here.
I have.
And for an exclusive first time, I'm throwing to Vicky to do the pronunciations to test her. I'm throwing in the deep end, guys. I've done my research.
It is. It really is. Even though I've said it a few times, as soon as I go to say it, I know I'm gonna stuff it up. But that's okay. It's fine. I will surrender and just embrace. I have my little story here. Okay?
And I'll rapidly jump correct
in.
You.
I was gonna say, just jump in when I've got it wrong.
Yeah.
No. All right. So, Lunasa. Oh, see, I used to always say Lunasad with a D on
there's
it.
No D.
And there's no D. It's Lunasa. Just an A. See, so there's my first one that's wrong, and that's okay.
That's one.
Let's mark that one down. That's I'm checking. Yeah. So in there that we've got, of course, we've got Lu, which is a god. He's known through many sort of areas, but we're kind of focusing on the Irish side of it. Mm-hmm. So he's often associated with this festival as the Shining One or the Harvest King. And where I've kind of got a little bit of a story. I've tried to condense it down a little bit so that it's not quite as long-winded, but we'll see how we go. Okay, so this is his story. So back in this time, there were two races in Ireland at that time. There was the Tuatha De Danann and the Fomorians. How did I go with that one?
You did good.
See, there we go.
I think now for anyone that does speak Gaelic or Irish or, or Gallagher, is it? I just want to ask the question. If you know, let us know. But Fomorian, I know, is very much an anglicized version. Is it the Fomorach? Is that how you pronounce it in Gaelic? Is it Fomorach? Or something like that?
I'm not sure. I tried.
Anyway, so, Fomorians.
The two races, basically. There's two sort of races at that particular time.
Which were the Fomorians, they were like the giants and the...
I think, yeah, they were sort of the giants and the Tuatha De Danann. Where? See, I got it.
I just made you do it a second time. That's
I know, you want me to keep saying it, don't you? You try to make me do it lots. So they were often kind of have been associated a little bit with like the fae and things like that. But they were a race that had a lot of special powers and things like that. They were a race of gods. They were the children of Danu. That's what it kind of translates to. So they were around at that time. So that's where we're kind of at the moment. So there was Balor, who was Lu's grandfather. He was the evil king of the Fomorians at that time. And before Lu was born, there was a prophecy that one of his grandson would be the one to kill him. Mm-hmm. So not wanting to get dethroned and all the rest of it, he sort of locked his daughter away and was trying to stop it, basically. I'm not going to go too much into all of that. But yeah.
Basically, the boys down to don't lock your daughters away.
Don't lock your daughters away. Doesn't work because guess what? She had triplets. So it didn't really work at all. But being the evil king that he was, and so worried about this prophecy of being killed, he threw them all into the ocean, and all the babies, unfortunately, and two of them died, but one survived, and he ended up resulted in Lou being raised by Mananon MacLear and Tal Chu.
Yes, Mananon MacLear, Tal Chu. Yes.
So he was the god of the sea. So they took him, they were of the Tuatha De Danann, and they took him, raised him, and he grew many skills. He was a very skilled warrior, lots of different skills and things like that. But the Tuatha De Danann were actually the oppressed race at that time as well. So they were kind of a bit more of the slave race, oppressed, high taxes, lots of things like that. So Lu then led the Tuatha De Danann to gain freedom and in a battle against the Fomorians. So then Lu faced off against his grandfather, Balor. So see, locking your daughter away didn't do anything. He came back. So Balor actually had an eye, one of his eyes was actually like a anything that it looked on, it would kill, basically. So you didn't want to be looked on by his eye. So what Lu did was he slingshotted a stone into his eye and it flicked it backwards, looking so that he would look upon his own army, the Fomorian army, which then killed all of the army, and they won just like that without fighting. He did it, like, use their own stuff against them because they had a lot of magical weapons and things like that as well. Mm-hmm. And then he was praised as the one who won. But then also within the army, there was one left who was Brees, who was the previous king of the Tuatha De Danann. And he was actually the one that had tried to make a deal to get the two clans, the two races together, but he ended up basically selling them out and they became the slaves and the oppressed. So he, trying to deal for his life, he told Lu, we will give you 4 harvests a year. So that they can still live and whatever and be great. And Lu wouldn't accept that. He said, we'll only take one, but we'll also, you need to teach us how to sow and plow. So then they could then do their own food. And that's how they became, I guess, self-reliant and self-sufficient. And that's how it became associated with the harvests, which I thought was kind of interesting that they were going to give 4 harvests, being that there's like 4 greater servants and stuff like that as well. I'm like, there's a bit of... So that's where it kind of comes from. It's all about the harvest. So this one is the first harvest and it's all about the harvest.
Can I just say, straight off the bat, 10 out of 10, shitloads better than yesterday's version. And I can say that I can throw shade at Vicky because...
You can! Because like, I'm the first one, I'm like, dude, that was cringy. It really was. I'm the first to say it. It was fun. So, yes. So, that is the story. I did much better with my pronunciation.
I think so,
practicing.
Too.
I think I did all right.
So, referencing the Tuatha De Danann, so this is something that I've recently learned, as in recently meaning from yesterday to today.
Yeah, it's so fascinating, though. I love looking into all of this.
And, you know, I've always hesitated to even explore Irish culture. Mm-hmm. Because of the fact that A, I can't pronounce any of the bloody words.
That's right.
So I don't know if I'm saying the right thing or the wrong thing. B, I've never really felt connected to the cultural significance or anything. Like, I've never felt a drawing to it until recent times. Because I've read about the Tuatha De Danann in so many books over the years, but I didn't dismiss it, but I just said, not ready for
that's
that.
It. Not ready there.
But it's only more recently. Like, and I know, like, Laura, if you're still listening to this podcast, I know that you have some pretty interesting things to say about this.
Yes.
Finding out that I actually have Irish ancestry, like, my ancestors did come from Ireland. So, based on that, I've kind of gone, I feel like I need to look into it. And it's not to appropriate it or to suddenly say, ooh, I'm Irish. Kiss me, I'm Irish. I'm going to wear green on Patrick's Day. No, I don't mean that. I just mean, as in, like, now that I've found this cultural connection, I'm like, I feel like it's my responsibility to educate myself on the history of my ancestors.
That's it, like, to have some knowledge and some understanding of it. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and that's another thing, just to touch on that note, if you do decide to go and look at Laura's channel, she has some pretty interesting content about whether Irish paganism is an open or closed practice, because obviously a lot of people who follow Wicca or follow modern neo-paganism, a lot of it comes from like Celtic Reconstructionist and Wicca and whatnot, and a lot of the things have been sort of taken from there and whatnot. So I think it's worth a listen. It definitely, especially in this day and age, with appropriation being the hot flavor, it's definitely worth a listen. And also looking at, she also does a thing talking about the differences between Celtic traditions and Irish traditions, because they're not one and the same.
No, it often just kind of gets lumped together. Yeah, it does. It all just seems to be lumped together. But Celtic can actually be all the way up into Europe and through there.
Yeah, exactly. So there's like Northern and Central European Celts that existed, because they're not a race. It's like a collection of various cultures and linguistic connections.
Yeah.
What we've referred to Celts these days tends to be like Scottish, Welsh,
sort of
Irish,
the British Isles kind of thing.
Well, the Celtic Isles.
Celtic, yeah, see, there we go.
Not the British Isles.
Not the British Isles.
That's another form of colonialism right there. Calling the British Isles when it's... The British Isles is actually England.
It's just
the Celtic Isles is the rest.
The whole thing is the whole thing.
So the British and Celtic Isles.
That's it.
But the Celtic Isles would actually include Brittany. And Brittany, not Britain. Brittany is a section of France. Yeah, where the Celtic... like Bronze Age, Iron Age, like artifacts have been found. So that's in the peninsula that comes off the top of France, or modern day France, which back then was a Celtic settlement. If you followed Asterix, the comic series, they talk about Gaul being where he's from. That's Brittany. And it was like this kind of their... Anyway, I'm not going to talk about comic books.
I was going to say.
That's a whole nother tangent in itself. So, the Tour de Danann.
Yes.
Here's something that I found out when I was doing this research and going on all these little rabbit holes, is that in actual fact, so we talk about them as, like obviously these days we tend to talk about them as gods.
Yes.
If you actually read manuscripts that were written by, because back in those days, the only people that would write things down were actually Christian scholars.
Yeah.
So they were not, obviously under Christianity, they were not allowed to write about other gods, because under the Christian view, there's one God.
Yeah.
With a capital G. Yeah. So because of that, they were actually then given as like this superhuman race.
Yes.
As opposed to being gods. So they were given this like very much a humans with special abilities focus, because they, so that way they could talk about them.
They could now, talk about them.
As I said, this is only something I've recently learned, so I'm not claiming this as my knowledge. That's what I've read and heard. If you know different, let me know, but that's what I've read and heard. So this is what I'm saying, is that whenever we touch anything where one culture has had its history written by another culture or another people or another belief system, a la Christians have written about paganism or whatever, you need to strip back the layers and just approach things with a very open mind as to what is real and what is fabricated, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because it's coming from a lens of a different culture. It's the same, I think, with a lot of the sagas and things like that in Norse culture and things like that. They were, again, they were written, you've got to look at who wrote it.
Find a source that's reputable. Yeah. This is why I am going to now start.
And it's not to dismiss those things either, but it's just to look at the different, be aware of who's written it and where they're coming from, and then start to discern a little bit.
Yes, because history is usually written by the victors of any battle, the ones who won or had the finances available to pay for book
to be
book
able
writing.
To do it. Yeah, because it was such, because it wasn't such an easy thing to do.
No,
like it really was. It was held up there high. So.
But that said, watch this space, witches, because we're actually coming up with an episode of How to Know Your Witch Story, which is your witch history. Witch Story is what we're calling it. So that's coming up in a future episode. But we're actually going to talk about, on a very high level, history of witchcraft and of
just some,
just the main key points, just so that you know the history of what we call witchcraft today and where it came from. Anyway, I digress. Coming back to the Tour de Danann, you'll actually see, that it's where did I go with that? I've lost my train of thought. This never happens to me.
Oh, it's how they were perceived.
Yeah, they were actually personified as humans with special
humans,
abilities.
Yeah, rather
when in
than
actual
gods.
Fact, rather than gods. Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
But bring it back to the harvest. Let's explore that a little, Vicky, because I know that you've got some pretty interesting facts about that.
Yeah, so I mean, Lunasar is, it's the first harvest. It's the greatest Sabbath. It's that first harvest. So it's a lot to do with the grains, the corn, all of those kind of things. And in, I guess, in Wiccan mythos and then in others, it's the, where the god is sort of the personification of the grain or whatever, and they're cut down in order to feed feed their people, basically, I guess. So you've got lots of, so that's linking in a little bit with Lou's story, how he actually brought, I guess, the ability for people to be able to harvest and grow their own foods, all of those kind of things. So there was a lot to do with the first fruits and those first, that first harvest and offering up the first fruits to the gods.
Beautiful.
Yes.
So with the first fruits being the key theme, so like I did a little bit of research about that. So some practices that used to do in the past were actually to climb up on top of one of the main hills or sacred hills or whatever you call it, and they would dig a little hole and put an offering of some of those first fruits into the hole to basically appease the gods and to obviously thank them as a form of gratitude, which I'm saying this on purpose because you're going to see that theme come up a few times. All about sacrifice and about gratitude and about all that stuff. So, and in addition to that, it was common practice, warning to any vegans out there, that in history they used to sacrifice bulls. So it was, again, the bull was representative of the male energy because it's a bull, not a cow. So it would sacrifice a bull, use its hide for different animal ceremonies, and then they it would be customary for them to eat bread that was baked with the first fruits or the first grain, and also eat the flesh of the sacrificial bull. So again, representative of Lu and sacrificing.
Yeah, it's that sacrificial king, which I didn't really go into too much, but it's often to do with that sacrificial king, that he's of the land. The other one that's kind of associated a little bit as well that you might have heard of is John Barleycorn. It's the same kind of thing where he's cut down with the corn and then given to feed the masses.
Yes. So lastly, I wanted to add with that, so it's with the bread that was baked, which I know you're going to go into a bit more detail as an activity that you can do to honor this season, but with the bread that we're talking about, the first grain or the first fruit, when the Danes and the Germanic tribes migrated to East Anglia and whatnot, those parts of England, obviously there were already Celtic and Irish and Gaelic people living there. And when the two kind of fused together, obviously the newcomers, as a way of assimilation, tried to fuse their beliefs with the existing people. So Lunasar was already celebrated there. So when they brought over their own traditions, they used to practice what was called, hang on, I always muck this up, Hlaf Maese, which is an old Germanic tongue.
Yeah.
It means loaf mass, which is where they would bake bread using that wheat harvest and fruit harvest together, and they would offer that up. And that was then when Christianity rose, because the Germanic tribes converted to Christianity, whereas a lot of the Irish Celtic people stayed with their original belief system. They converted, I think, a bit later, because I think back in those days, if you became a Christian, you would basically had access to more things. You had more rights as a person, because it was the rise of Christianity. So so that Hlaf Maese became what is modern day Lammas. So that's why some people think that they're synonyms, that Lammas and Lunasar are the one and the same. Yes, we use them as one and the same, but just, again, know your history, that Lammas is technically more of a Christianized version of Lunasar.
Yeah.
Like, technically both pagan, but one is more converted than the other.
One was came from one part to the other, and they have similar practices and things like that, but they are, to some degree, a separate, I guess, kind of.
Yeah. Because, like, as you were saying, Vicky, like, about the whole thing of with the bread.
Yeah.
So it's supposed to be an embodiment of the gods, or...
Yeah, because it was, you would think of it as in, like, he was, the sacrificial king was the embodiment of the grain. So then once you're cutting him down, you're taking in a part of that king. He sacrificed himself so that others can live. So you're taking in that first bread.
Which is in another fun fact.
It is, yeah.
That's basically the premise of, if you think of anyone who has a Christian upbringing, you'll know the whole thing of the body of Christ and going to do communion.
Yeah.
That's where it came from. Any church people, don't come for me. I'm just reciting history. I'm not trying to rewrite the Bible.
No, but then on the other flip side of that, that's also a nice segue. If somebody is coming from that and coming into a more pagan or view, that's a I guess
it's a nice segue, like it's something that is familiar to you, but there's also another version of it. So rather than going to a church, we had a consecrated bread, bread and wine and whatnot, you can do bake your own bread. Yeah. Have you baked any bread?
I have baked bread.
Is it hard? I've always been scared to.
It's not hard.
Okay.
It's even easier if you go to the shop and get one of the like basically pre-made packs that you just add water to.
Just add water.
Add water and a bit of yeast. Mix wow. it up. Leave it and then it rises and then you can shape it. But yeah, I've made bread before because that's one of the things that's really great to do to celebrate the season is to make your own bread. And I've done it many times to make your own bread. If you want to, you can make it into I know sometimes in some traditions, I'm not going there with this one.
Why not?
Is that you can shape it in a shape of a man. So you know what, if you want to be the PG version, just go for your gingerbread man. Otherwise, if there are children present, just remember things rise. That don't okay, dough rises, so things can be a little out of proportion. So just a little tidbit there.
But if you've got no children around and you want to
watch
the sacrificial gods
rise,
then
go for
by
it.
All means, add a section in a certain place. And
that's right. So yes, you don't have to do that, of course. You can just bake a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
But it's just something fun to do. It's something that's incorporating the season. You can have a bit of fun, and that's what the season's all about. Is about trying to give things a go a little bit, because I know we talk a little bit about like the inner work as well of what's kind of happening on the inner thing. This is a time when we, if you look at the metaphorical harvest, is to look back at those things that we set maybe in spring when we first planted
the seeds that we planted.
Yeah, the seeds that we planted back in spring, and then as we tended to them a little bit more through the summer solstice, like to sit down and have a look and see what's happened, what haven't you done, what could have changed, what's blocking you, all of those kind of things. And it's time now to just go get it done. This is the last part. This is our harvest. We've only got a couple more harvests left, so
yeah,
get it happening.
Because on that note, like I even did a bit of reflection exercise to honor Lunasar, and it was basically all about me going, okay, so what goals did I set back at Ostara in the spring festival when we were doing all that? And then with New Year's, being the summer solstice and New Year's, what intentions did I set? And even though it's not exactly in line with the summer solstice, but I still set intentions for the new year.
Time. Yeah.
And remember, intentions without actions are nothing more than dreams.
Yep. Yep.
So as witches, great to do a big spell, but we need to take real world action in the real world because that's where things happen.
Yep.
They don't just magically happen without action. Meaning if you did, if your intentions for the new year was a new job, but you haven't sent a resume, fucking send one.
That's it. Get it sorted.
If your intention was to find...
You've got to help yourself as well.
Yeah. If the intention was to meet the person of your dreams, but you haven't...
Left your house.
Gone out there
to meet someone. Although that may have been a little bit tricky, but...
Oh, well, like, you know, since New Year's, most places...
That's it. Yeah, I was going to say, everything's open now.
Or you haven't signed up for an app or something or a website something that you can meet people or whatever.
Or just like, getting out there and meeting people and doing things.
Yeah,
God, otherwise it's take just, that action.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the other thing is that, like, obviously with the seeds that we have planted that have come into fruition, we want to then give gratitude for the fact that the gods, universe, source has helped us get there. Because we set the intention, we did the work, we did the action, now we've got it. So now we need to give thanks, which is like what I said before, gratitude is the theme of this thing.
It is, yeah, because that's what that first, I guess that first loaf as well, is not just that you're taking it in, but it's also that appreciation for that you've got it.
Yeah, exactly. So with that, you may decide to set up a little gratitude altar. So obviously we're going to be doing an upcoming episode about various altars that you can do throughout the year, and as well as your standard altar, what an altar is and is not. But basically you could set up a gratitude altar. So it doesn't have to be anything fancy, but for the period of February, in line with the season, you could set up a little temporary gratitude altar for the season, which you could cover it with like gold to represent like abundance or success. Or you might put red, like, you know, just those types of colors to bring in your power, your personal power or whatnot. And then you can decorate it with things that represent your successes. So for example, if you did an intention setting and spell work for a new job and you got it, you might put $100 note. I say 100 because like I don't want to put like a 1 cent coin.
I was gonna say you want to be encouraging,
like, yeah, more abundance. So you put a $100 note down and maybe a business card or
Something that represents card or work. Something from there, name of the place or whatever,
or if it was written like on there. Or if it's something to do with, I don't know, some form of personal achievement, you might want to put down a reminder of that you've achieved.
Yeah.
So it's a way of honoring and showing gratitude for the things that have come into fruition, or the things you're manifesting if they're still in mm-hmm. progress. Yeah. And then the idea is that if you have that altar there, you tend to the altar each day. Now, you don't have to do anything massive. Just go either sit in quiet contemplation if you're a meditator or do some form of an offering. You might, for example, if you do grow things in your garden,
yeah.
you might offer them to the gods on your gratitude altar as an offering.
Yeah,
here's the first fruits or the first grains that have grown, and offer it to them.
Offer them to them.
Obviously, you then do not consume them because it was an offering, so then you would need yeah. to use them in other means. But yeah, just a fun little thing like that.
I love that.
So what are some other things you could place on your altar?
Yeah, so this is one that I do love. I do. I've made these a few times and they're really fun. Is corn dollies. It's something quite traditional. It's often associated with this time of the year. So it's grabbing the husks, keeping the husks from the corn, drying them out. And then, yeah, you fashion them into a little dolly. So you kind of fold them over, have little ties around there to make a little head, make some arms and make like a little body. And so, yeah, you can make a little corn dolly. Oh, look, there's a lovely little picture there. If you're watching on YouTube, you can have a little bit of a look. And I might put a link to a picture or something like that under episode, so you can have a bit of
We could always make that as the episode title.
Yeah,
I'll see if I can find an image.
See if we can find one. Yeah. But yeah, they're a really fun thing to make, and you can use them in a couple of ways. Like you can use them ritually for the season as well. So there's one where you can just keep it for a beautiful altar decoration, and you can bring them out each year, and you can pop it on your altar. You can also hold it and fashion it in a way that it's a representation of the corn mother or Mother Earth. And so she stays then on your altar until spring, when you plant those new seeds, and then you plant her with the new seeds for abundance and to help them grow. Another way you can do it is the sacrifice part, where you've looked into your intentions, you've looked into all of those things, and there's something that's holding you back and you're wanting to release that and sacrifice that off. So then it's bringing, putting that intention into the corn dolly, or you might like to even write down whatever it is and place that in there. Place it in your cauldron, in a cauldron or a heatproof bowl, and then a nice little burning ceremony to release that out. So it's sort of a labor of offering something up, and that actual sacrifice. Because sometimes a bad habit, like we think, oh yeah, it's easy to get rid of, or we do want them gone, but it is actually a sacrifice, because somewhere, some way,
it's serving a purpose,
and it's fulfilling some sort of need. So we need to start to feel that, I guess, sacrifice.
You love burning things.
I really do.
It must be your Leo rising.
Yes, I am.
You must be that. That's me. I just want to burn everything.
I just want to burn it all. Just burn it all. I'm like, oh gosh. I'm like, don't look into that too deeply. But I do. You don't have to. I guess you don't have to burn it. You can bury it if you want to. But I find to release stuff, because a fire is that element of transformation. Well,
that would be that transformation and
it's
release.
That transformation.
Whereas burying it would be more like muting it. Is it to grow or is it to mute and ground the energy?
Yeah, you can either use it either way. It's usually to kind of ground it down a little bit, or you bury something because you want it to grow like a seed or something like that. That sort of thing. So I find that fire is one of the best ones to do for that transformation, releasing kind of thing. So yeah, that's that one. So that's corn dollies, but they're really fun. They're really fun to make.
I don't know what just happened, but my screen froze for the explosion, and then you went blah, 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 blah. And
oh,
so
did
I'm
I?
Hoping that the recording is fine.
Oh no, yeah, because you just froze, but I kept talking, which usually I freeze.
In case it's not, do you remember what you just said? I can edit this part out, but
yes. So
we said that about burying would be about to
grow. Is probably either to make something grow. So if you've got that intention, like planting a seed, you think of it like in terms of planting a seed, or maybe to really ground down those energies like into the earth. So that's why I find fire, when you're wanting to release something, it's that fire is that transformation element. Yeah. And it's just great for helping to release everything.
Perfect. Out. Yeah, I thought that.
But yeah, so that's why.
Just
why
in case
I usually like to use a bit of fire.
Weird.
Yeah, just in case.
How awkward. Anyway, so something else that you to do with burying and also to do with sacrifice and whatnot.
Yes.
So there's a little, now it's in honor of the Irish. We all know that the Irish love their potatoes.
Yes.
potato.
Sometimes it's so hard with some words. It's awful, but some of them just instantly go to create an accent.
Potato. Yeah.
Anyway, don't get me wrong, I love potatoes too.
So do I. But potatoes love my waistline.
I was going to say they love me too.
But so the little thing that you could do with the potatoes. Now, I actually didn't create this. This I got from a book that I've got. It's the Llewellyn series on Lunasar. There's got a little thing in here that what you can do is you can take a potato, cut it in half. Now, if you're doing this with children, please be mindful knives are used. Yes. So you use a big knife to cut it in half. And then you need to think of what you're trying to manifest. So if it's more money, for example, you might then carve the outline of a dollar symbol or whatever, something that represents money. It might be a pentacle. Could be anything, whatever represents abundance, or make a sigil. So you're carving the outline. Now it needs to be like a three-dimensional outline, like you don't just want a line.
So make it a bit
thicker, chunkier, extra. Because you need to go on the outside and then inside, and then using a paring knife, looking in on the side, you need to kind of cut into it and like remove it, so it's almost like a bulging,
like a stamp.
The symbol, the symbol will bulge out like a stamp. And then now there's several ways you could do this. Obviously the less economically friendly way would be just dabbing it on some ink or some paint and then stamping it on a sheet of paper with your intentions and everything, and then carrying that piece of paper on your person for the spell to work.
That becomes like a talisman. I love it.
Talisman, exactly. Or the other ways, if you want to, with your first fruits, because you know that berries like to stain shit.
They do.
You could mush some berries to make like a paste kind of thing and then use that as your stamp.
Yeah.
You could stamp with the berry juice, and then that could be a little thing because it's using the harvest and the potato harvest.
Yeah, it's bringing both elements in. Oh, I love that.
And then if you're going to do that, now obviously if the ink you've used is toxic, obviously cut the symbol off the potato and then bury the rest of the potato in the ground so it can grow and manifest. If it's non-toxic, like it's berry juice, you could just bury it as is with the juice on it and everything like that, and it will be totally fine. So that's a little...
I love that. That's so cool.
A little bit of fun.
Yeah, so, see, and that's what it is. It's all about fun, I think, as well. There is that celebration aspect to it. And one of the things is there was one aspect to it is the games and doing different games and getting outside. And there was a little bit of, linked to the story of Lou, his foster mother, Talchu. I remembered. She actually died while they were clearing the land for the first harvest and things like that. So it was actually like a funeral games that they would play in honor of her as well. So play games, go outside, play some bocce or something.
Bocce is good. So funnily enough, I've actually been doing exactly that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been doing some stuff.
Now, I know that the World Wetlands Day or whatever it's called, it falls on like the 2nd of Feb, is around the, I'm not sure if it's the exact date or thereabouts, that my husband and I decided to go out and buy some rollerblades.
As you do.
Because like this season is all about doing things that you've always wanted to do but been too scared. I've always had a dream of being a figure skater, but obviously figure skating in Australia, not so easy because it's bloody hot.
I was going to send we don't a lot have, of ice.
Yeah, no. So I thought the next best thing is rollerblading. You can do a lot of the same tricks. I know some people do figure skating on rollerblades. Yep. And so we decided to buy some. And then unbeknownst to me, I forgot that I live on a fucking hill. It's not a hill, but it's like enough of a decline.
It's
that
enough.
When you're flying down that road really fast and then you hit a speed bump,
have this awesome visual.
I've become the king of throwing myself into the... the nature strip. It's a soft landing. And all my neighbors happened the day that I first put them on. My neighbors were all outside watering their gardens. Really? All of you on the same fucking day?
Why now?
So, to save my pride a little bit of a bashing, I started to drive because in my estate we've got a nice little wetlands. So, it's been man-made wetlands because we've got a lot of natural flora and fauna, which most of you know. Yeah. So we drove down the hill to the wetlands to park the car on a flat surface. So then we thought we'd go around the wetlands. And even that isn't completely flat.
No.
There's little undulations in the track. Yeah. And there's a few sections that are all like that aggregated concrete.
I was going to say, is it like that bumpy where you go...
It's not rollerblade friendly. Because you're like all smooth. I'm like, these are so amazing. These beautiful skates. And then you go back to smooth. And I'm like, what the hell?
What was that?
And I keep saying it to Chris, and he's like, well, it's not like they made it for us. Like, they just made it for a boardwalk, not for,
practical.
You know, us to go around and Yeah.
Why not?
Although we did then find there's another little park just at the end of the street because we got a little bit, we're getting our confidence
getting
now.
Getting a bit gamer now. Oh,
so
I love
we went
that.
To the little park and it's got like this big loop and then a little loop, almost in like an infinity symbol.
Ooh,
so I skated, I actually have now started to skate Enchant in an
infinity.
Love it. So I do my little chants while I'm skating around in a little infinity symbol, but I have to make sure there's no kiddies around because that's where the kiddies playground is. So I have to just be careful. Being a responsible rollerblader.
Look at you.
But on that note, when at the wetlands, it reminded me of something else that you can do around Lunasar. So it's about water scrying. So if you don't know what scrying is, obviously Danny actually goes into it in much more detail in a previous episode that when we interviewed her, Danny Thorpe, from Spellbox. But in actual fact, what you could do, now it's if you want tap water, you can use tap water, but they say to use natural spring water from somewhere. So either from a creek, a river, a wetlands. Yeah. See my connection?
Love it.
And if you hold it into a dark or black vessel, and the trick is to obviously put some form of like candlelight or something soft lighting. So you can see the reflection of the candle dancing in the water. And that's just to allow yourself to get into that relaxed state using it as a focal point. And then allow your gaze to soften and then removing the candle so that the light flickers, but you're not seeing the reflection per se.
Yeah, you just
then
just that soft
allowing
light.
Whatever comes to you. You may see something physically in the water, or it may be something, it might just subdue you into this trance state and you start seeing images or hearing sounds or getting feelings internally.
Yeah, so it could be like those thoughts or a flash of a memory or something like that that has some kind of meaning to it.
And with scrying, like, you don't need to overthink it. Just allow whatever comes to you without judgment and then just note it down in a journal afterwards and then see if you can deconstruct it using a conscious brain once you've come out of your trance state or meditation. And it's a good way of, I guess, kind of asking the gods, like, is anything, are you on track with your goals or do you need to realign them?
Yeah. Ask those questions.
Exactly.
I love that. I do.
Oh. There was another one I forgot us to put on our little itinerary.
Oh, what was
itinerary
that?
Schedule, itinerary. Whatever you call it, like the running sheet. it's another one that I did recently because Chris and I have started to go on like walks together of late.
Oh yes, yes.
It's now's a perfect time because, like, you know, summer's finished.
Mm-hmm.
Well, always finishing. We're heading into autumn, so
yeah, because it's the
trees
gateway.
Are starting to shed. Trees are starting to shed things. Birds' feathers are changing. So basically, keep your eyes peeled for any magical offerings. You could hunt for your magical tools. So it's a perfect time to like start looking for that kind of stuff. And we will be touching on tools when we talk altars. But I recently found start off as a walking stick. Hmm. And I was using it to support me on this walk. And I actually felt a really strong connection to this stick. So I put it in the car after we finished the walk. And Chris, like, are you taking this stick home? Look, it's not a stick. It's a future staff. It will be a staff. It's like, doesn't look like a staff. I'm like, it will when I've bedazzled it.
That's right. It will. Don't worry. My poor husband, he just looks at me now and doesn't even say anything. He just keeps going. We have
so
many.
Bring all the rocks and sticks
and
feathers and
feathers and gum nuts and whatever else I find. It's like, yes, it's coming with us. Like, do we need another one? Yes. Yes, we do.
Yeah. So, like, obviously, don't go ripping limbs off trees or plucking feathers out of birds. But if it's there,
that's right.
Just ask universe, source, spirit, country,
whatever connection
you have, if you're allowed to have it.
Ask permission and wait for that response.
Yeah, and because like sometimes you'll pick up something and you'll get a hard no.
Yeah.
It's happened to me before.
Yep.
Especially around native wildlife, like of native feathers. And I was like, can I use this? And they're like, no. Okay.
Okay. I'll leave that where it is. Yeah, that's it. And just do that. Just respect it. Leave it and continue on.
Yeah.
And it's nice to sometimes leave an offering as well if you are taking something as an exchange.
Mm-hmm. Whatever it might be. You might be walking down the street with your berry loaf.
Yeah, you got your loaf in your bag.
Like you could, because like you especially think of like obviously, be cautious of what you're leaving as an offering. Because remember, wildlife native to the area will probably eat it. So make sure it's not poisonous or toxic.
Yes.
But if you give an offering, like you know, think how you can feed the local. Like if you've got a lot of possums or
leaving some water out. Leaving some water is a really good one as well. Like, or watering the tree that it might have come from or something like that, giving that offering of something to have.
Yeah, I think it's a nice beautiful way to
do it as well. Yeah.
And then obviously bring it back to gratitude, giving thanks for the offering that you were given.
Yes. Yeah. That's right.
But yes, the gratitude.
So what other kind of, I guess, if people wanted to decorate their altars and things like that, maybe some correspondence?
Well, before we head to the... Add, I was going to say,
before I jump the gun?
The modern... No. I thought of this now that... So when we talk correspondences, so I read something in this book here about the Scots.
Oh, yes.
So this is like kind of helps you think about the correspondences and things that they used to do.
Yeah.
So in the Scottish Highlands, the beginning of August, remember, a different time of the year, marked a time to renew and refresh magical protections on the crops, livestock and other property. So Rowan crosses were placed over doors as a means of magical protection. You could do that.
Yep.
And tar was sometimes painted onto the ears and tails of the livestock in hopes of ensuring their health and safety. Please don't put tar on your dogs and cats.
Yeah, don't do that, please.
No, that would hurt.
Please.
Then there's red and blue threads would often be tied onto the cow's tail, and magical charms would be spoken over the udders to help ensure a plentiful milk supply. And I thought that's kind of cool.
I love
and cute.
That. Yeah, that's cool.
But bringing it to more the modern archetypal things. Yeah. So obviously we've spoken about the fact that this season's all about gratitude, abundance, blessings, celebration, harvest, reflection, introspection, discernment, and sacrifice. Yep. So
sacrifice.
Insert any of your favorite things to do surrounding those things.
Those kind of things. Yeah, it's sort of that two-way. It's got a bit of celebratory, but then also a little bit of the sacrifice aspect to it.
Yeah, because we've got the archetypes for this season. For the female archetypes, you have the mother, earth, water, goddesses. Yep. You have the pregnant mother, the exhausted mother, the selfless mother, the nurturer, the spirit of the land, the established queen. And then you have both the tree and water nymphs.
Yeah.
For the male counterparts, you've got the father god, earth god, solar god, the warrior, the protector, the sacrificial god, the dying god, the spirit of vegetation, and the newly crowned king. So these all tie back to the stories that you were saying about Lou.
Yeah, it's that sacrificial. There's often that element of like one king, the old king being taken over by the younger king, that constant cycle. And it always comes back to that birth, death, rebirth sort of cycle that we have throughout everything.
And so then for deities, obviously the ones that you've discussed, you have Teltu and Danu are the Celtic deities. But then you also have the likes of Isis for Egyptian, the Dryads, Demeter, Kore, Luanatar, which is a Finnish goddess, Nemesis, Ops, Hathor, Hecate, Diana, Pomona, Juturna, Stata Mater, which is another Roman goddess, and Artemis in Greek times. So I know that, shout out to Jay. Jay's been doing a lot of work with Artemis of late. It's one of my friends who I've been talking to of late.
Yep.
And she's been working with Artemis at this season. For the gods, you have Osiris, Lu, of course. I started doing this. There's an Aztec one.
Oh yes.
Mm.
You're on your own. I'm not gonna help you.
Xiuhtecuhtli. It's spelled Xiuhtecuhtli.
I don't know. That's too many.
However you pronounce that word.
Yes.
There's Consus, Thor, Vulcan, Thoth, Loki, Vertumnus, Apollo, and Ragbot. Now for colours, I know colours. You know a lot about the colours.
Colours are good. So colours of the season are like the gold, yellow, but more of like the honey yellow rather than the really bright yellow that we'd have at the summer solstice. Now it's moving more to that bright, to the, not the duller, but the more browning, I guess, moving to the autumn colours. So you've got the golds, yellow, the honey yellow, green or even black for like the earth. Aspect to it as well. So those kind of colours are usually your nice go-tos, and you can always decorate it with corn dollies or grain or corn or harvest things as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then I'm just looking at my list. I lost my spot.
Trying to think of what other ones there are.
No, I think that's for colours. Yeah, I think that's everything. Pretty much it. I mean, there's herbs, there's trees, there's flowers, there's crystals, there's metals, so there's much. Animals. There's so many different directions we could take this. One of the ones that I actually do like is the tarot correspondences to this season.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So the ones that are relevant to Lunasar, you've got the strength card. So about having that compassion towards self rather than being that ferocious lion. Because remember, we're going into the Northern Hemisphere, it's 15 degrees Leo. So it's that Leo energy.
Yeah, so it does have that Leo energy already.
You then have the Sun card. So obviously the Sun card is associated with Leo. So it's Northern Hemispherical reference there, but still.
Yeah.
Then you have the Seven of Pentacles.
Yes, yes. So I like this one.
Seven of Pentacles. So I've got a visual aid for those that are watching on the tube. So you've got two crops, one that's fruitful, one that's not so fruitful. So there's several ways you can read into this card. It's that whole thing of like, do I give up on some of my goals that aren't working and focus on the ones that are working? Or do I keep tending to all goals because maybe those are just taking longer to flourish?
Yep.
So it's that kind of point where you're kind of sitting with your goals and where they're at. You also have the Ten of Pentacles, which is all about achievement of wealth and abundance and prosperity and security and whatnot. The Four of Wands, which is all celebratory with the passions and desires.
Yep.
Then the Justice card and Wheel of Fortune. So Wheel of Fortune is an interesting one because it's that whole thing of everything, movement and taking a new direction. The cycle is taking a new direction. And with the Justice card, it's about really approaching things very, I don't know if the word is the word, pragmatically. Like where you look at the, gather the facts, start being logical and rational, weighing everything up.
Yeah, taking out the emotion kind of thing.
And then being quite cutting as to what's serving you and what's not. And then it's that applying that logic of, well, if this isn't working, do I change my goal or do I pursue it and keep going? Is there going to be a benefit if I keep going?
If I keep going with it, or what is it that's holding, what is it that's stopping it from working and working on that part?
Absolutely. And then I guess lastly, just touching on, if you wanted to celebrate it, but you're trying to do it in a way that's not so obvious because maybe you're still a closet witch.
Yep.
So we like to give you options. You could always choose the 26th of January. Y'all know what public holiday that is. I won't use the word because I know it's a point of discussion.
Yeah, and, it's a big thing at the moment.
Yeah, exactly. So the 26th of January is a day that you could use because most people throw a feast on that day.
Yep.
So if you're that way inclined, you could do that. There's also the World Wetlands Day on February 2nd, which is an international day. If you want to go down to your wetlands, gather some water and then do some scrying, but remember to return that water to where you got it.
Yep.
There's also Valentine's Day.
Yeah, true.
We didn't touch on that,
actually. We didn't.
So what did they used to do in history?
Yeah, so there was the, I can't remember the name of them now, but there was certain kinds of marriages where you
trial would come marriages.
Together. They were basic, a trial marriage. You would come together for a year and a day. You'd give it a good go, come back after the year and the day. And then it was either yes or no. So if it didn't work out, you would just part your ways and that was all okay. Or otherwise you'd go through the full hand fasting ceremony and go along. So
So this time of year is according to the
there was also that aspect
wheel of
the
year, this time of year is perfect for marriages.
Yep, for marriage.
Or then if you wanted to do another form of feast, which I love doing this one, Chinese New Year. And I love celebrating Chinese New Year because remember, it's all about that prosperity, abundance, da 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 da.
Yeah.
Like the Chinese very know how to celebrate people. That aspect of life. They're all about the red and the gold.
Yes, it's already got it all in there as
It's already got it there. So you literally just go to your local Chinese restaurant for dim sum or yum cha, as some people call it, and just like feast on all the things. And if you're not married, you could go around asking people, Gong Xi, Fa Cai, Hong Bao Na Lai, which means,
yes, of course,
we Happy New Year, give me your red pocket. Or where's my red pocket?
Where's my red pocket? I love it.
Or you could just say Gong Xi, which means like Happy New Year. Happy New Year, like in that's in Mandarin, that's or great. In Cantonese, it would be Gong Hei or Gong Hei Fat Choi, which is like the full Gong Xi Fat Cai or Gong Hei Fat Choi. So that's Cantonese and Mandarin for
I'm having trouble with the
Tua Dadanin and the Tal Chu and
yeah, I was just saying, and can't add any more in there for me. Well, you know what, Chinese, like just go to your local bakery and buy a beautiful loaf of fresh bread and enjoy it.
Delish.
Enjoy it and then have that as a part of your own personal little ceremony. Like it doesn't always have to be very big and obvious.
No. Just
add little elements into your everyday life. And I think that's always the most special as well, is when we're adding those things into our already.
Because when we overcomplicate things, that tends to make us not do the things.
Yeah.
Because we've overcomplicated it and you're just like, oh, stress central.
Yeah.
So just keep it simple.
Keep it really simple. Keep it really simple and keep that intention. And maybe it's more of an internal working.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Like a, sitting there having that contemplation and things
I want
like
bread
that.
Now.
I know, me too. I'm like, I really want to
like
go
nice,
get fresh,
fresh bread. Oh,
like that crunch, delicious. Like the crunch. Oh. Yeah, and a soft in the middle. Oh, yes.
Okay, on that note,
on that
I hope
note,
you
we're
have
gonna
all
go.
Enjoy this episode.
We're all going to run to the bakery.
Yeah. So I hope you have all enjoyed this episode. Please let us know if you if you're interested in hearing more about, like,
Yeah,
if you're listening still,
if you're still listening,
we'd love to
love
hear
to
from you.
You.
I'm going
to
send you a message on YouTube and see if we can do a bit of a collab session, because I think
that
would
be
amazing
awesome.
To bring in some.
It would. Because like, that's what I really want to know is like going to these different places, going to the source and finding out different information and how it all fits in.
Yeah. And happy to do a shameless plug for it's irishpaganschool.com. So I know that they do have some free and paid courses. I've had I'm going to have a little look later this afternoon, but I have heard her talk about it. So yeah, go check it out if you're interested. Get it from the source.
Get it from the source. That's it. And if you do end up doing like a altar or making a corn dolly or something like that, send us a photo.
Oh yeah,
a
please
photo
do.
Up.
That'd
I'd love
be great.
To see it. Yeah. Or if you make bread, if you have a go.
You could have
bread.
The expected and...
Nailed it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay, awesome. So have an amazing day and we'll see you all real soon.
Bye. See you soon.